While out driving, during me teaching Benji how to drive, he gave me a lesson. In fact, he gave me quite a few lessons. It's just this is one that I'm inspired to share with you guys. You see, over the years, many people, including myself, have made a statement. I know what's wrong with the church. And usually when that statement is made, it is ensued by some suggestion on how I go about fixing what's wrong with the church. And for the most part, when people make those statements to me, you lose me right at the statement of, I know. And then everything else is kind of like Charlie Brown speak. Wah, 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 wah. But I got to be honest with you. When a 17-year-old young man, unprompted, makes that kind of a statement, my ears perk up. I wanted to hear this. So I asked him to elaborate, and well, he proceeds to tell me how a high school marching band works. You see, for a high school marching band, there is a teacher, and she picks the music. She sets the practice schedule and keeps everything moving. Then there are these things called drum majors, and those are the guys that I have now learned are the people that stand on the pedestals waving their arms like this, conducting the movement of the various musicians. Underneath those drum majors, there are things called section leaders. And it is a section leader's responsibility to, well, make sure everybody in the section knows what's going on, to be kind of a mentor. Usually they're a senior person that's done this before. They make sure people have the things they need, and when they get there, they have their music and all that kind of good stuff. And so they take in a role of leadership. And finally, you get to individuals that are doing nothing more than just playing. And if you're a marching band, you're playing and you're marching. Each has its own responsibility to do their part. Here's the thing. They may not be playing the exact same note or at the exact same time, but they are doing their part to contribute to the harmony and melody of the piece. Everybody is committed to perform the exact same thing. In a band, they could be called upon to do a solo, but it's never about an individual. The thing is as these musicians blend their time and talents for a single goal, they form a community. And that's what makes a band work. These kids become friends. They hang out together. They know what's going on in people's lives. So this becomes much more than just about playing music. As they grow in their community, it extends beyond playing notes. They create a support group for one another. Here's the thing. If there was no community, there would be no band. By George, I think he's got it. I think maybe he understands the church better than the minister understands the church. So the question becomes is, what is a community? You know where I went first, right? It's called a dictionary. All right. I wanted to know, what does the world think a community is? And the world thinks a community is a group of people living in the same place or having a particular characteristic in common. The world thinks a community is a feeling of fellowship with others. Interesting, they use that word. Because of sharing common attitudes, interests, and goals. A community is a group of interdependent organisms of different species growing and living together in a specific habitat. By George, I think they got it. I think they might know more about community than we understand about what it means to have a community of believers. See, a community, it's about living together. Okay, I got to count it up again. I think I'm kind of like a 10-year band parent veteran. We've been doing this since Caleb was in sixth grade, so that's about right, 10 or 12 years. And I just want to tell you something. These kids are a family. They live together. Now, they don't, okay, sometimes they do end up each other housing on a whole bunch of bases, but they spend so much time together. They live together. Community is all about sharing. Share your problems, share your thoughts, share your fears, share your hopes, share your dreams, share everything about your life. Band kids, if you're part of the band, you probably know more about members of your band than their parents know. Because that's your community. It's about being dependent on one another. Could you get the picture of what it would look like? Let's just say in this community of band that you had, we'll go with a 40-member band, okay? So you've got 39 people that have committed to playing the piece, except for you've got one person decides, I don't like that piece, so I'm going to play Mary Had a Little Lamb. Could you see what that would look like? And what if that person decided when the drum major instructs everybody to go left, that one person decided to go right? That one person and their actions and their attitude would destroy the entire community. They're dependent on one another. It's about fellowship. That's a big word. We'll talk about that word a whole bunch this year. Community acknowledges we can be different, but at the same time, we have commonality. So look out across the people that are sitting here this morning. First of all, thank you for being here. But as I look out, there are different ages. There are different genders. There are different beliefs. There are different thought processes. There's everything that is very different about us. But if you're here today and you claim the name of Christ, then you know what? We have a commonality. His name is Jesus. And that's what the church is here for. So with all that being said, I'd like to welcome you to 2024, because we're going to spend an awful lot of time discussing the idea of community this year. See, unbeknownst to my son, while he's giving me this lesson, downstairs in my office was a whiteboard full of sermons that across the top of the sermons, it said Back to the Future, which is kind of where I started with this idea of the sermon series this year. But after that lesson, I went home and went back to the church. I erased out the word future, and I just put back to community. Now, since I was originally going to talk about future, we're going to spend a lot of time this year bouncing around time in the Bible. We got a lot of places that we're going to go. We're going to go and look at moments that shaped Christianity and should give us an understanding about what it means to have a Christian community. And for our first series, well, I'm going to keep this band theme. There's only one small problem. I don't know a lick about music. I can't sing. I can't play an instrument. If I work real hard, I can play a radio. So I guess maybe what I need to do is I need to go hire myself a really, really good band teacher. I take your hand in
from a baby. You look lost, Mr. Holland. Yes. Helen Jacobs, remember, I hired you.
Oh. Of course you did, I'm sorry. No, I'm not. It was not that I'm lost. I was just looking for the... Well, yes, of course I'm lost.
What an auspicious beginning. This way. Your first day as a teacher, Mr. Holland. Excited?
Nervous. Boy, I never thought I'd be here.
No? Why not?
Well, you know, like most people, I only got my teaching certificate so I'd have something to call back on, and now I have.
This isn't a drive-in, Mr. Claridge. Hands off. You know, Mr. Holland, I don't think of teaching as a fallback position.
No, I didn't.
And I grow nervous around people who do.
I'm really very happy to be here. Really.
Good. You'll drop by my office later on. I have a list of students you'll be advising.
Advising? Can I ask when I'm supposed to be doing this advising?
That's for you and the student to arrange. You meet your orchestra when?
Fifth period. Are they any good?
They try hard. And by the way, I'll need a complete lesson plan from you by Friday.
Right.
For September and October.
Right.
Principal Jacob has hired herself a new teacher. Problem is, Mr. Glenn Holland never wanted to be a band teacher. He saw it as, well, in his own words, it was a fallback position. Do you find it interesting that one of his first concerns was how good are the musicians and the quality of the students that you've given me? Hello, the title is teacher. They're not supposed to be good yet. If they were all good and complete, you'd have nothing to teach. See, he had visions of composing great music. His focus was not on teaching. This was just another gig to pay the bills. And it was a perfect choice for him because, after all, teachers have lots of free time. School lets out at 3:30 p.m. They get a two-week vacation at Christmas and another week for spring break. And they have their entire summers off. Okay, I say that because I am married to a teacher. They don't have lots of free time. So as he begins to become a teacher, the reality begins to set in. At first, none of his students liked him. He was going to constantly be battling the time it takes to be a teacher. He would find himself at odds with his co-workers and opinions. And honestly, it was a mess. So, maybe a little reluctantly, our teacher is on board. He's ready to go. So now the question is where are we going to go in time? And the answer is we're going back to the beginning. Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many signs and wonders were performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions and gave to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying favor with all people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Where are we in history? Well, I know when I said in the beginning you were really expecting me to make the jump all the way back to the garden. I love that story, and maybe later this year we'll end up back in Genesis, but not today. We are about at 33 AD, probably a few months after Pentecost. And again, that's what I need you to understand. We read the Bible, chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, and it's very flat. We never think about the idea that in between those chapters, time is passing. We are in Jerusalem looking at the very first view of the church. And yeah, I know, you're thinking, haven't we done this before? Yes. Yes, we have. We did a sermon series in 2012 called The Snapshot Church, same text. We did a sermon series in 2013 called Riding the Ships, same text. We did a sermon series, and there was actually just the introduction sermon in 2017 called Famous Firsts. Same text. And maybe you're thinking, you've got 66 books in the Bible, Barry, and there's a lot of pages. Why do you keep coming back here? And it's because it's the purest version of what the church was supposed to be. And it's because we still have a whole lot to learn from this very simple picture. See, we need to understand that here is the foundation of what we call church community. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. So they kept this simple. Four things that they committed themselves to do. They committed themselves, they fellowshipped. And again, we are going to talk about that. In fact, we're going to spend 2 weeks talking about fellowship because guess what? There's a lot more to it than fried chicken or soup. Or what we call fellowship. They committed themselves to, well, the breaking of bread. I like bread. Oh, I love bread. But that isn't talking about a nice loaf of bread or a big yeast roll that I dip in honey and butter. It's about something much bigger. It says they prayed. Ooh. You know, prayer was never intended to be a side dish to anything. They prayed, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that. And just so you know, next week is our very first prayer Sunday, so we're going to spend a lot of time doing prayer this year. And I know what you're expecting that last word to be is they taught. Yeah, here's the curveball. They learned. It says they committed themselves to the apostles' teaching. So that means that they learned. And these were the four pillars that the church community was based on. So we're going to spend 7 weeks talking about these four pillars. And you're probably thinking, that's not good math, Barry. Well, remember, two for fellowship. Then we've got three others. We've got the sermon today. And then we're going to spend the very last week talking about this statement that's right at the end. The Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. You see, and the goal of this is not to teach you something brand new. If you're looking for some brand new theology, you are in the wrong place. My goal is to help you understand community when it comes to the church, because once we understand what community is, maybe then we can lay out a plan to put community back into Parkview Christian Church. However, before we can dive into these four little principles of fellowship, breaking bread, praying, and learning, there was another verb that was mentioned, and it's what we need to talk about today. It says, they devoted themselves. And the very first word I want to deal with there, and I made sure I made this really big, and I made it nice and red so everybody can see it, because this is about themselves. This is a choice that each and every individual had to make. It could not be done out of guilt, and it could not be done out of force. Either you were going to do this of your own choice, or you were not going to be doing it very long. You see, the reality is, if I spend a guilt trip to have to get you to come to church, then eventually you'll find another way to deal with your guilt. If I have to resort to name-calling and convincing you to come to church, then you know what? I'm solving the wrong problem, because I'm just trying to get you to come to church. There is absolutely positively nothing wrong when you have children in your household that you require your child or your teen to come to church. But let's just be very honest with the kids downstairs. Let's talk about them for just a second. At some point, you're going to have to transfer that word required into they want to come on their own. Or you know what's going to happen, right? Eventually, they are going to move out of your house. And eventually, they're not going to be living under your roof. And eventually, they're going to be making their own rules. And I hate to tell you this, if they were only coming to church because you made them come, they ain't coming to church. It ain't happening. Because we failed at doing one thing. We made the emphasis coming to church and not building community. It's an interesting statistic when you go from middle school to high school. Middle school bands are usually pretty huge, okay? It's a funny thing that happens when you go from middle school to high school. You know what happens when you go to high school? The band gets smaller, because a lot of the kids that start out in middle school, once they reach high school, they decide there's other things I want to do, other adventures I want to have, other things that have gotten my focus. And so guess what? They hang up their instrument and they never come back. Somehow that sounds like church a lot of times, doesn't it? It's because in their moment, they were only playing an instrument in a group. They weren't part of a community. The important part is the community. But for this moment, you need to remember the only person you have to worry about for right now is yourself. This is what the apostle writes. A little bit of a quick click there. Sorry. So even though I wrote to you, it was neither on the account of the one who did the wrong, nor the account of the injured party, but rather before God, you could see for yourself how devoted to us you are. So you are not here to judge other people and their come to church mentality. And you notice I've been using my little quotes to go come to church. And that's because I have to fix that scripture, that statement for you. Because you don't find it anywhere in scripture. You see, they were never about coming to church. They were about coming to Jesus. Once you connected with Jesus, then being in fellowship of the believers just seemed like a natural idea. In the early church, there was no such thing as membership. They were all believers, and if you were a believer, you were part of the community. And if you were an unbeliever, then you looked at the community like it was rather weird, and sometimes you became curious about it, and you got too close, and you got sucked into their community. If your definition of church is Sunday morning worship service, then what you're going to have to do is work on your definition. The issue is we have substituted membership and attendance for a word the church, early church used fluidly. Connection. Being a member does not make you connected, and being here in the building every Sunday does not make you devoted. You know what that makes you? Obligated. And eventually you get tired of the obligation and you decide to go find something else to do. You want to know why people don't come to church? Because they have no value in it. Because there's no community in it. That was the big selling point of the early church. So let us just define devoted, just so we know what we're talking about. Devoted is the act of dedicating something to a cause, enterprise, or activity. Devoted is the fact or state of being eagerly dedicated and loyal. So here is our first awkward question of 2024, and there is a whole bunch of them coming behind this. When it comes to your relationship within the community of believers, does that define you? When you think about your relationship within the believers, are you in the act of dedicating something for a cause, enterprise, or activity? Are you in the fact of being eagerly dedicated and loyal? I'm not going to give you an answer to that question for yourself because I can only answer it for one person. That's me. This is a self-evaluation sermon series for you to look at yourself and decide, where do I stand in my relationship, not just with Jesus, the community of believers. So my goal today is to just give you some food for thought in answering that question. And so I am going to give you some keys to creating community. Right out of the definitions. And notice the first word that we saw there is the word of dedicated, which means exclusively allocated or intended for a particular service or purpose. And before you say, yes, that's me, I am a dedicated person, keep in mind this comes down to three principles. You ready? The clock, the calendar, and the checkbook. You see, ask yourself this question. When you make plans to do things, do they have to fit around church, or does church have to fit around other things? How do you lay out your calendar? When you lay out your calendar, do you put your commitment to the community of believers first, and all the other stuff has to fit in between it, or does it work? I put all the other stuff that I want in my life first, and then I look for the empty spots, and that's where I start sticking community. Which way does it work? You know, Jesus put it a lot more poetically than I could have. Jesus said this. He says, where your treasure is, your heart will be also. And I read that statement, and immediately my defenses want to go up. I want to build my wall, and I want to build my moat, and I want to make my life safe. I want to make sure everybody understands that, hey, I am doing the best I can. I have to arrange priorities in my life. And I get it. I'm with you. But at the end, you do understand something. You can't arrange priorities. You have to make priorities. Jesus put it very bluntly this way. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God, and his one that he used here was money, but you can take out the word money and I can drop any word I want in there. Do you really understand what he's saying here? Remember, we say Jesus was a great teacher, okay? Well, here's his teaching. You can't have two priorities. Well, sure you can. I do this. No, you cannot have two priorities, because Jesus said if you have two priorities that are in constant battle, eventually you will pick one. And here's the thing that he says. I love the way he said it. Because he didn't say you'll just do the other one half-hearted. He didn't say you'll just kind of fit the other one in. What's his words? You'll despise it. You'll look at the two priorities, and once you pick, the one that didn't win first place doesn't get second place. You know what it gets? No place. Because Jesus understood, if you kept it in second place, then the battle is going to continue, and then you're going to be dealing with obligation. You're going to be dealing with guilt. You're going to be dealing with all this other stuff. And so it is easier just for you to say, you know what? This is the priority of my life. This other thing that I thought was my priority really isn't all that important. And down the list it goes. Not my words, folks. I believe Jesus wrote that. See, I look at the definition of what it means devoted, and it said exclusively. Exclusively. Now, if you are married, you know what that word means, right? When you stand in front of the preacher and you say your vows, it says forsaking all others, right? It means that you are exclusive to that person. Even if you're just boyfriend and girlfriend, I've heard other teenagers say this, that they come to the fact, well, he cheated on me. Well, that means that you promised to be exclusive to a person. The first thing you know, you're no longer exclusive to them. And you get, that's the word. That's the word of devoted. You cannot be exclusively devoted to A and B. It doesn't work. It'll destroy community. You cannot be committed to a band and to another band, right? Because eventually what's going to happen, they're going to have practices in conflict, they're going to have performances in conflict, they're going to have things in conflict, and eventually God is going to make you make a choice. Pick. And I think that's exactly what we saw. I think COVID just shined a really huge spotlight on it. People have been making their choice about what they are going to be exclusive with. See, the reality is you cannot approach community with a fallback mentality. Yeah, I'm going to do this church thing as long as the church thing doesn't cause too much stress in my other life. It's going to. Okay? I'm going to do this Jesus thing as long as I can fit Jesus in with all my other beliefs. Let me know how that worked out for you. It doesn't usually end very well. It can't be fallback. You can't decide that you're going to be part of a band and say, well, I'm only going to show up for the practices I feel like. You can't be part of a band and say, you know what, I'm only going to show up for the performances when it's not raining. That's not the way this works. Community is a lot bigger than just being in attendance. So that's dedication. The next word that you see there is loyal when you look at those definitions. And that goes with the word faithful. Faithful to a cause, ideal, custom, institution, or product. That's what loyal means. It's one thing to make a commitment. It's another to live it. You know, it's real easy to walk down an aisle and say, I want Jesus. It's real easy to climb into a pool of water and let some crazy person dunk you under the water to symbolize the relationship. It's an entirely different performance when you walk out this building and you say, you know what? I meant it. I am dedicated to it and make it a priority. I am going to be faithful to show up over and over. Did you not see it when I read the description of the very first church? All the believers were together and had everything in common. So that means they came to my house? Yeah, they came to their houses. That means I went out to eat with them? Yeah, I went out to eat with them. That means that they knew about the bad things in my life? Yeah, they knew about the bad things in your life. And you know what? They loved you in spite of them. You see, if you're going to do this, this idea of loyalty and faithfulness, it's not an option, it's a requirement. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2 says, "Now it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful." Okay, this doesn't sound like as much fun as it was going to be. It's a question of, can I trust you? Matthew chapter 24, verse 45, "Who then is faithful and wise servant who the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their good food at the proper time?" If you want to count yourself faithful, can I trust you to take care of the things that you want to take care of, that you committed to take care of? Faithfulness, that's what God rewards. Seriously. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness." So you have to be dedicated, and you have to be loyal or faithful. And I think a lot of us try to do that, but we've lost our third key. It must be out in the parking lot somewhere. We dropped it, because there is one more thing that's very important if we're going to build community. Yeah, here's a word. Eagerly. Marked by enthusiasm or impatient desire or interest. I think I felt some of that this week when they were talking about 6 to 8 inches of snow. And I'm like, that's going to ruin my Sunday. I had, because I wanted to be here. And it bothered me that others did not. It did. Because I wanted to be here, because here is where I belong, because here is my community. I know that might scare you to think that I think of you guys as my community, but you are. And here's the thing, enthusiasm breeds enthusiasm. When you come in and you are excited to be here and you want to be here, you know what? Other people know it. But here's the thing, when you come in and you're here because you have to be, you aren't fooling anybody. Now, this is not to say that we're supposed to always come in with a cheery smile on our face and, "Woohoo, it's Sunday." Trust me, I have those Sundays. The alarm clock goes off. I'm kind of like, I wonder if I can find somebody else to preach this Sunday. I really ain't feeling this morning. So it's not that it's always going to be easy. But here's the thing. If you're enthusiastic about it, you tell people about it. That's the reason our tongues don't work the way they would by our community, because we're not enthusiastic about it. We're not excited about it. You know what? I guarantee you, if you were a Pittsburgh Steelers fan or you were an Indianapolis Colts fan, you are talking all about them this morning because you're excited, because you watched those games, and you know what? You are excited about it. I have never met a true football fan that doesn't have time to talk about football. They don't exist. But I've met a lot of people that claim that Jesus is Lord, but they have very little time to talk about it. You see, if it's something you look forward to, I love it. He called it impatient desire or interest. Unfortunately, we have created a church culture that is all about, thank God it's Friday, but oh no, it's Sunday. Excited when the work week ends. I don't have to get up in the morning and go to work. Oh yeah, there's that thing on Sunday morning that I'm supposed to do. That doesn't excite me very much. You see, back in Acts chapter 2, I love the attitude that they came together. Glad and sincere hearts. It wasn't something that just came out of their mouth. It was all the way down inside them. This community had impacted every part of their life. The mighty worshiper David got the understanding of what enthusiasm is. It says, "I rejoiced with those who said to me, let us go into the house of the Lord." Do we really rejoice when it's getting close to Sunday? Are you excited? Or is it just another part of your calendar you have to click off so you don't feel guilty? So you met your obligations, so somebody doesn't ask you why you weren't at church on Sunday. Is it about community? You know, we keep asking ourselves why our kids don't want to come to church when they get to be around teenager age. If we're not excited about community, then why would anybody else be? If it's just that thing I do, then you know what? Eventually they're going to find something else to do, right? Thinking, man, that's kind of harsh. This doesn't sound like it's going to be all that much fun. It's going to get fun, but we've got to carve up some foundation, and we've got to break some old habits, and we've got to talk about what is really holding your life together. Because the reality is, it's about time, folks. That's a double meaning sermon title. You get it, right? It's about time, and the fact that it's about time that we as a congregation look honestly at where we are in this church community. And it's about time, because you don't fix this by just preaching a sermon on Sunday morning. See, without these keys, if we're not dedicated, if we're not faithful, if we're not eager, we just can't wind up the idea of community. In my living room, we have a grandfather clock. And my kids have never seen that thing move as far as the hands move. And they've definitely never heard it chime, because we purchased it for a house that was a lot bigger than the house that we live in now. And when it chimes, it echoes all the way through the house, even at night. And we got tired of it waking us up. So you know what we did? We reached in and grabbed the pendulum, and we stopped it from swinging. And then we realized every now and then it got bumped, and the pendulum would start swinging, and it would start chiming. So you know what we let it did? We started it one day when we were going to head out of town, and we just let the clock wind down. And then we took the key, and we put it in the secretary, and it's not wound. It can't keep time anymore, and it can't make a sound, because I allowed its structure inside of it to just unwind. And I fear that's what we've done in our church. We let everything unwind to the point that there's no more community. And this year, we're going to be all about the idea, it's time that we take some interest in the community. Not the community just out there, but the community that's in this building.